Chapter 15. Chief Hicks had a hard time keeping his mouth shut while investigating the case. At the cottage cafe, where a few women and a lot of men gathered for breakfast, Hicks held a captive audience, something that seldom happened in his life. He enjoyed being the one who knew something nobody else did.
"You should have seen the murder scene. Bloody as hell. Sam Hugh had plenty of time to get rid of evidence. His mom was killed around 1 or 2 in the morning, and he didn't report her dead until almost 2 the next afternoon. It doesn't take a genius to figure who killed who."
P.D. Duvall, a Van Buren graduate with a master's degree and an officer in the Arkansas Air National Guard, defended Sam Hugh.
"Are you calling yourself a genius?"
Other men sitting around the table laughed.
"Just because he lives across the street from his mom and found the body doesn't automatically make him guilty, for Christ's sake."
Duvall motioned to the waitress for a warm-up and lit his third cigarette of the day.
"You want to condemn the guy because he's gay. Smart and gay is a lethal combination, according to you and a lot of folks around here. You're all a bunch of idiots."
Carl Creekmore, a local attorney with an IQ that equaled Duvall's and who had outsmarted most of the men in town, agreed. "Hicks, you need to shut up this talk about Sam Hugh killing his mom. He's innocent until proven guilty." He winked at Duvall. "You have heard of that, haven't you?" But Creekmore and Duvall were outnumbered. If a straw vote was taken in every church in Van Buren on any given Sunday, the results would find Sam Hugh Park guilty. He was a homosexual, and that was against God's law, and therefore he was guilty. Sam Hugh knew nearly everyone in town thought he was a murderer. The harassment by the police continued throughout the summer and into the fall of 1981. His gay friends were repeatedly called in for more interviews. A few of them actually told the police that Sam Hugh had admitted to killing his mom when he was drunk, which was most of the time. Lie detector tests were given several times to Sam Hugh. On one finding, an Arkansas State Police polygraph examiner concluded that Mr. Sam Hugh Park intentionally tried to defeat the administration of an effective polygraph examination. In his trade as a lawyer and his continuing movement even after instructions, which makes it impossible for this examiner to render anything but inconclusive. In other words, because Sam Hugh was a lawyer, he was able to outsmart a polygraph test. Rusty and Linda Myers remained steadfast friends. They knew how hard Rui Ann's death had affected her son. On some days, he was inconsolable. They visited with Sam Hugh often, either at the Winter Palace, where he now lived with a steady flow of people in and out, or in the Myers' shady backyard filled with white and red impatiens, several varieties of hostas, and hanging baskets of petunias and ferns. Their yard was a respite for Sam Hugh, and even though his friends tried to steer the conversations away from his mother's death, it always hung over them like a heavy cloud.
"What if I did kill her?" Sam Hugh asked one pleasant evening a year or so after his mother's death.
Rusty had grilled steaks, and they had just finished the last of a peach cobbler.
"What if I had a blackout and killed her and just don't remember?"
"Don't be ridiculous, Sam Hugh. You loved your mom and you always did a good job of patronizing her with your now mother, and you're absolutely right, mother." Rusty's compassion for his Acacia fraternity brother was genuine. He had always admired the way Sam Hugh dealt with his mother from the time he reached the age to understand that Rui Ann Park was a woman who needed to be handled diplomatically. Not everyone in Van Buren was willing to tolerate her bossiness, and not everyone was impressed by her claim of being descended from not one but two people who came over on the Mayflower. Sam Hugh stood up from the black wrought iron table they sat around. He arched his back and rubbed his shoulders and sat back down again. He'd only eaten a bite or two of his steak and had declined the cobbler because he said he was watching his weight.
"Oh, you're right," Sam Hugh said. "I know that. I was thinking about how Mother drove. We'd be on our way to Fayetteville on that treacherous 71 highway, and she'd drive 30 on the flat stretches and 50 on the curves."
Rusty and Linda Myers laughed. Sam Hugh was a great storyteller, and when he was only a little drunk, there was no better comic around.
They especially liked to hear Sam Hugh tell about his courtroom antics. He once defended a young man named Billy Bob something. When the judge asked Billy Bob something to rise and face the court, Sam Hugh interrupted the judge and said very flamboyantly, "Your Honor, my client prefers the name Rolando." Linda Myers had especially loved her visits to the Park home when she and Rusty were first married. The home was a showplace with its pecan wood flooring, expensive rugs, and genuine antiques from the Federalist period that Ruyan loved. One rug came from New Orleans and was woven especially to celebrate the bicentennial anniversary in 1976. Often when they visited, Sam Hugh played the piano for them. He was a great musician, and Linda Myers loved to hear him play. Classical, romantic ballads, show tunes. Sam Hugh had perfect pitch. But as more and more undesirable folks camped out in the Winter Palace, Linda Myers decided her visits with Sam Hugh would only continue at their house. On her last time to drop in on Sam Hugh with her young son in tow, she was invited in by a man she'd never seen before. He was wearing red tennis shoes and a red patent leather belt with his name, Timothy, engraved on the back. He said he and his mother were sleeping in the guest room, but she hadn't awakened yet. Sam Hugh's law practice suffered because he didn't take care of the cases he had, and no new ones were coming in. More and more, he spent money on lavish trips to San Francisco, in which he paid airfare and hotel arrangements for some of the same men who had told the police they thought he had killed his mother. Even though he inherited enough to live on comfortably, Sam Hugh squandered the money and was forced to sell items out of his mother's house. He and one of his buddies took all the silver and china over to Tulsa to sell to an antique dealer. After that came the expensive rugs, the antique furniture, and the portraits of dead officers of the American Revolution. Sam Hugh was often seen walking down Main Street, a glass in one hand and a bottle in the other. He particularly liked to visit with Garrick Feldman, mainly because Feldman now owned the Press Argus, which Sam Hugh's parents had owned for 50 years. He felt safe there, in the building he had run around in as a boy, watching the mysterious printing press perform its duties. Feldman enjoyed hearing stories about the first days of the newspaper when Hugh Park put out the paper single-handedly. But he did not enjoy Sam Hugh when he stank of vomit and piss. And there was nothing entertaining about witnessing the steady, debilitating decline of a once brilliant mind. Tiny broken blood vessels appeared on Sam Hugh's cheeks and nose, and his shoulders narrowed and sagged into a bloated and distended stomach. Food didn't taste good to him, so he didn't eat. He smoked and drank until he passed out, and when he awoke, he started the process all over again. He couldn't drive a car because his hands shook uncontrollably, so Bill Spradley made an every-other-day delivery of Ancient Age in a half-gallon bottle.